When wishes were horses and beggars could ride, in a stone castle by the sea there lived a rich laird.
What am I supposed to choose? There are so many.
And so he left the trail, and he followed the sound of the music.
I am the goat from the hills and the mountains. And when I have finished eating these herbs and these vegetables, then I shall eat you, too.
Once upon a time, and welcome to the Story Story Podcast. I'm your host, Rachel Ann Harding, and I have some stories for you. This is a podcast to hear traditional stories told by some of the best storytellers in the world. It will take you to long ago and far away, and will bring you back safely. My mother had told me not to do it. My aunts had told me not to do it. But I was late for work and had to turn on the car so the snow and the frost on the windows would melt away before I joined the rush of drivers on this cold morning. So I ran outside with hair still wet from my shower. The snow swirled around and the car sputtered and coughed a bit, annoyed at being asked to start in such low temperatures. But it turned over and I flipped on the defrost to full blast. I grabbed the red scraper to attack the windows, and as I stamped and jumped to stay warm while brushing the snow off the car, I felt the first tug at my hair and the cool air on my neck. I shook my head, thinking I had caught a strand on my coat, but when it happened again, I whirled around, and there he was. My frozen crush, my blue-eyed frost fairy, Jack Frost, shimmering in the morning light, not quite real, but not quite invisible, giving me a smile that froze and melted my heart a little at the same time. His lopsided grin rolled around his mouth as one of his long fingers reached to play with my wet hair, like an artist who has seen a new canvas to play with. Many of the stories you hear on this podcast come from a long, long time ago. But new fairy tales are being created all the time, and this episode features two new storytellers to the podcast with two neo folk tales for your lovely ears. The first teller for this episode is Kendall Lynch. She's a writer, actor, and a mother living in Southern California. She tries every day, in big and small ways, to live out her deepest values and remain radically curious. She likes to dance, sing, and ruminate. She is currently working on a young adult novel about psychic friends. The tale for you today is one of her family stories that has been passed down for at least three generations and is the delightful tale of Flop Ears the Hound and Emma Jean.
Flop Ears the Hound and Emma Jean by Kendall Lynch. One day, Flop Ears the Hound and Emma Jean were eating hot dogs down by the flat creek behind their house. Emma Jean's dad was boiling the hot dogs up in a pan over a fire. They could have cooked them back inside the house, but it feels good to be outside, cooking your simple dinner, especially if it's a choice you make and not a necessity. "Daddy," said Emma Jean.
"Yeah,"
he answered. "I can't eat this hot dog unless you butterfly it," she told him.
"Emma Jean, I can't turn your hot dog into a butterfly,"
he joked. Emma Jean had a giggling fit, imagining butterfly hot dogs flying away on little wings. At school, they told us that hot dogs are a major choking hazard for children. You have to slice them down the middle like hot dog butterfly wings to make it safe for a kid like me.
"Oh, well then, here,"
he said, and cut up her hot dog just like she suggested. "Do you think we should cut Flop Ears' hot dog too?" Emma Jean asked.
"Flop Ears has already wolfed hers down, so I think she managed just fine."
Flop Ears is a hound dog, the color of a copper penny, with the floppiest, softest dog ears that hang down almost to the floor. She's a true and loyal companion. Emma Jean's daddy says when he brought Flop Ears home, a song came with her, and he heard it out of thin air. When Emma Jean sings this song, Flop Ears perks up her floppy ears and comes to nuzzle Emma Jean with her wet nose. The song goes like this. Flop Ears the hound, Flop Ears the hound, always flopping her ears around. Good dog, Flop Ears, Emma Jean told her and rubbed Flop Ears' soft head. The hound dog was staring up at Emma Jean intensely, waiting to see if she might drop a piece of hot dog she could gobble up. Flop Ears can be a little bit of a scaredy cat. One time, a real cat came into the yard and Flop Ears got so scared stiff she hid behind Imogene's legs and made the awfulest hound dog howl you have ever heard. She sounded just like this. But when the mood strikes her, Flop Ears will run. On a walk down to the creek, if she catches the scent of something, off she'll go yowling and yapping, scaring birds and all kinds of creatures half out of their wits. Dad, said Imogene, taking a big mouthful of hot dog and ketchup and bun.
Yeah, he answered.
My dog's a hot dog.
Imogene, I don't speak hot dog.
That made her giggle again. She chewed up her food, swallowed, and started over. I said, hot dogs are really terrible for you.
Is that right? He said.
Oh, yeah, just the worst. Sad meat, she told him.
Huh. Where'd you learn about that? He asked.
My friend Dusty is a vegan, which means she doesn't eat a thing from an animal, not one thing, not even eggs. She says I should be a vegan, too. She says it's the only way to save the planet. Imogene's dad blew out a long, slow whistle, just like this. And looked up into the trees.
You know what I like about you, Imogene, my little mousekin? He asked.
What? She replied. I like how you're always thinking about how to live a better life and how to do the right thing. And I like how that makes me think about how to do the right thing and live better too, he told her. Thanks, Daddy.
I'm going to head back to the house.
He poured some water from a nearby jug onto the fire, which made it crackle and steam.
Are you coming? He asked.
I think I'll sit here a while until I get too cold, she said.
Okay then, pour a little more water on the embers when you come, and don't put your hands in there, he warned her.
Daddy, I am almost 10 years old. I know better than to put my hands in a fire, Imogene told him, feeling a little offended that he'd think of her as a baby who didn't know about getting burned.
I know you know, sorry about that. Sometimes parents have to say a thing out loud to make themselves feel better. See you inside, he said,
and then turned around and walked toward the house. As he went, he sang a song softly. It went like this. Flop Ears perked up her ears at her own soul song, but she did not follow Imogene's dad. After all, she was Imogene's loyal beast, and she rarely left the girl's side. Imogene was getting a little bit cold, and just as she had decided to go back up to the house, Flop Ears sniffed the air. The dog had been lounging on a blanket by the warm, dying embers of the fire, but suddenly she stood up and her body went rigid. Before Imogene could even ask her what was the matter, Flop Ears took off like a bolt of lightning across the damp, cold ground. Flop Ears! Imogene yelled after her, but it was no use. Once she catches the scent and runs, she becomes a different animal. There was nothing left for Imogene to do but follow. She grabbed half a leftover hot dog, hoping to use it to lure Flop Ears back home. Imogene ran after Flop Ears for a long time. It wasn't hard to find the hound dog's trail because she was making a big trench through the leaves and muddy earth, and she was also making a yowling sound so loud it was easy to follow. It sounded just like this. Imogene felt a little nervous. There were such things as coyotes and cougars out in the woods at night. You'd probably only ever see a deer and nosy raccoons, but still, it was almost all the way dark now and Flop Ears was still running way far down the creek. Imogene knew her dad would get worried soon that she hadn't come inside. Up ahead, she could see the old run-down shack that had been on their land for about 1,000,000 years. She'd never been inside. Her dad said every year he needed to tear that thing down, but he hadn't gotten around to it. He made her promise never to go inside, because it leaned to one side and sagged even more every time it rained. He said you never knew when it might just fall right on top of you. Imogene usually kept her promises, but can you guess where Flop Ears happened to be running to? That's right, straight into the old shack. And once inside, the hound dog's howling just stopped. Imogene got to the front door of the place and called for Flop Ears again. She didn't hear any sound inside, not even a whimper. She thought to herself, you're going to be in big trouble if Daddy finds you here. Her dad didn't get mad very often, but he could go real quiet when he felt disappointed in you. She'd just have to explain to him that this was an emergency situation. There was no front step. So Imogene took a deep breath and used her hands to pop herself up onto her belly and climb through the doorway on her knees. She stood up. The wooden floor of the tiny old cabin felt soggy under her feet. "Flop ears," she whispered, not daring to be too loud. Her eyes adjusted to the darkness, and there wasn't much to see. Old rusted tin cans, food wrappers, a mattress, and a mass of blankets. At least she hoped that's what it was. And an old wood-burning stove in the corner. No living things inside except for her and Flop Ears. Phew! She could make out Flop Ears' shape just a few feet ahead and went to stand beside the hound dog, who leaned hard against Imogene's legs. Flop Ears was shaking so hard it felt like an electrical current running through them both, and Flop Ears was staring at the stove. Just then, the whole cabin began to creak and moan as if an earthquake was just beginning its rumble. Right when Imogene thought for sure the whole place would crumble, the old stove in the corner yawned the biggest, tiredest yawn you've ever heard, as if the opening where you put the wood in was a giant mouth. It sounded just like this. And then its mouth started to glow just a little bit, like someone lit its fire. Imogene could feel the warmth coming from it now, and the orange glow made it easier to see. She felt very, very afraid. But she made herself speak up because there was nothing else to do but be brave in face of the unknown. Hello? She said. Imogene figured if the stove could yawn, it might be able to talk too.
Oh, hello there.
It said. I'm sorry, I don't speak fireplace, Imogene replied nervously. Then the stove started to chew, just like it had a big mouthful of hot dog and ketchup and bun, except what it really had was a mouthful of wood and old ash. It chewed and chewed and finally took a big swallow.
Oh,
it said.
That's better. I said, I have not had a visitor in a long time.
Who, she stammered, are you? Flop Ears had sat right down on top of Imogene's foot and was still shivering with fear.
I'm the stove who lives in this place. I'm a warm helper. I'm a fire hazard, perhaps. But so long as my little chimney sticks out to the roof and remains unobstructed, I suppose I am more helper than hazard.
Oh, Imogene replied. Well, why are you talking to me now? She asked.
I can only speak to children because children understand how things that are not people can actually be quite full of life. Only a handful of adults still remember this fact, but children always do.
That makes sense, Imogene said.
I'm glad you understand,
the stove answered.
May I ask your name, child?
I'm Imogene, and this is my dog, Flop Ears.
Hello, Imogene. Hello, Flop Ears,
the stove replied, and then said nothing more for a long time. Imogene wondered if maybe she had just imagined the whole conversation. Don't you have a name? Imogene asked.
I don't suppose I do. Haven't had much of a use for one, as I said. I don't normally talk at all.
What do you do here, all by yourself, then?
There was a time that I roared to life for the same family night after night. I was well cared for, and I burnt clean and often. At present, however, I only occasionally provide warmth to unfortunate souls who have nowhere else to go,
it replied.
The nice thing about being a stove and not a person is, I'm never in any danger, not even around the most desperate of people. I simply exist and hold a fire.
Well, it gets cold around here in winter. It's a good thing to keep people warm when they need it. Some things we all need, she said.
You seem like a smart person,
the stove told her.
I wonder if you might... No, I'd hate to take advantage.
What is it? Imogene asked.
You see, I have a toothache.
Stoves have teeth? She said.
No, but I think that's the best way to describe this deep and throbbing pain in my mouth. I can't get rid of these shards of glass no matter how many times I swallow. They poke me day and night. If you could just climb inside and sweep them out, my pain would disappear,
the stove explained. Flop Ears whined at Imogene's feet. She did not like the stove's idea, but it sounded simple enough to Imogene. I think I could manage that. Imogene looked around for something to protect her hands. There was plenty of trash, and she grabbed an old crumpled potato chip bag. First, she checked to make sure there weren't any crawly bugs inside, then put it on her hand like a glove. Now, stove person, I think you seem really nice, but I'm a little nervous to go climbing around inside you, so I'm going to have Flop Ears hold on to my pants. Flop Ears understood what she was asking and grabbed hold of the bottom of Imogene's pants with her teeth.
I mean you no harm, Imogene, but I can appreciate your caution, the stove said.
It began to open its mouth as wide as a doorway. The house around them shook and moaned, though not as much as before. Slowly, on hands and one knee, Imogene crawled into the mouth of the stove. It was ashy and cold inside, and she got to work quickly. She could see what the stove was talking about. There were large pieces of broken glass scattered all around. She swept them out as fast as she could, right onto the floor below. She'd been holding her breath so she wouldn't breathe in any of the ashes, and she finished up and got out of there, safe and sound. Flop Ears didn't let go of her jeans until she had both feet back on the ground. The dog was so happy she hopped around and whined and jumped up to lick Imogene's face. It's okay, girl. I'm okay. Good girl. Good girl, Imogene told her.
Thank you so much, said the stove.
It moved its mouth around, stretching it every which way.
I haven't felt this good in a long time.
You're welcome, replied Imogene. You know, it might be nice to have a name, just so I don't have to call you Stove Person anymore, she suggested.
I've tried to think of a name before and nothing ever sticks. Imogene and Flop Ears are lovely, but those names are taken.
Thought Imogene, trying to think of all the names she knew. Maybe Seth or Gus?
Those names sound much too rambunctious for me, the stove replied.
Von Ellis? Colin, Maggie May, or Maddie Pie? How about Mary? She tried again.
Definitely not Mary. I knew and loved a Mary once, and there could never be another one like her, the stove answered.
Okay, let me think, Imogene said, squinching her eyebrows down tight and pursing her lips together. Then it hit her. Blaze, she said, because you burn bright and hot.
Blaze, blaze.
The stove rolled the name around its mouth like a juicy piece of gummy candy.
It's perfect. It's strong and straightforward. It captures the best parts of me. Thank you, Imogene.
You're welcome, Blaze. Just then, off in the distance, Imogene thought she heard someone call her name. Flop Ears heard it too and pricked up her ears. The dog had finally relaxed and was lying at Imogene's feet, but she got up when someone definitely called Imogene's name again from far away outside.
Imogene!
Uh-oh, said the girl.
What is it?
Asked Blaze. Well, it's dark out and that's probably my dad calling me. I'm going to be in trouble for taking off after you, Flop Ears. Flop Ears just wagged her tail. Blaze, I really have to be going. My dad is definitely going to be worried.
Of course, friend. I'm so glad we had this chance to meet. Will you come back sometime?
Definitely. Now that I know you're here, I'm going to tell my dad about you. Maybe he'd even let you come live with us. We don't have a fireplace and it sure would be nice to cozy up to you on a cold night. Flop Ears wagged her tail at this. There's nothing she liked more than warming her backside by a fire.
Oh, Imogene, how I would love to live with you. I am over 40 years old. I haven't kept up with the times, but I would guess I'm worth quite a lot. I'm made of cast iron and soapstone, which is very special. It's also quite heavy, which is why no one has carried me away yet, said Blaze.
Okay, I'll tell my dad, Imogene said, starting to head out of the shack.
Imogene, could I trouble you for one more favor?
The stove asked. Okay, but make it fast. My dad does not sound happy.
Would you sing the song of Flop Ears' Soul to me just once before you go? I'd love to hear it,
Blaze said. Oh, sure, she replied. And just before jumping out the door, with Flop Ears on her heels, Imogene sang. Flop ears the hound, flop ears the hound, always flopping her ears around.
Today's fairy tale sponsor is Godmother's Day Spa. Still waiting for your charming? Need a quick fix? Godmother's Day Spa is the place to feel like royalty. Don't let the ashes or your identity hiding, flea-infested fur coat keep you from a little self-care. Pamper your tired hands. Treat your sore feet with Goldfish exfoliation. Sever those split ends with the best hair artists who have scissors sharper than Excalibur. Not only do they cater for regular maintenance, but if you have fancy balls to attend where you're about to reveal your true fabulous self, well, right now, Godmother's Day Spa is running a kitchen wench special, the complete makeover, mani, pedi, facial, puff up, and blowout, completed quicker than you can say bippity boppity boo. Go from raggedy rose to rapturous royal by making your appointment today. Don't delay. The winch special runs from now until the last pumpkin is rotted and needs to be booked in advance. No drop-ins or dropouts, not able to give refunds. This episode is also brought to you by the new Patreon supporter, Jessica. Jessica has the unique ability to see tree fairies when they wake in the spring. Rumor has it she can even talk to them when they start to flower, and is first to know if it'll be a good year for fruit. Jessica is also a generous supporter of storytelling, which is pretty cool. A big thank you to her and all the other patrons of the podcast. Be like Jessica and become a patron for as little as $4 a month while getting some sweet perks and rewards. It would be pretty cool. Jack looked longingly at my wet hair, his face full of playfulness. But this was Jack Frost, and I know he can be trouble. Sometimes a puppy kind of trouble, sometimes flashing lights trouble. I was getting colder and colder. He reached out his icicle-thin fingers to touch my hair, but I held up my hand. Wait a moment. I'll give you 5 minutes before I go to work. I finished brushing off the car and scurried back inside. I applied my makeup, got my lunch together, put on my warmest coat, and poured myself a cup of warm tea. Then went back outside without a hat, putting my things in the car. Stepping away from the warming vehicle, I walked carefully across the crunching silver grass to Jack standing in the shadows of a frost-tipped tree. I smiled at him and shook my still damp curls. His grin, filled with somewhat sharp white teeth, was unnerving as it was full of delight. His fingers danced across my hair, barely touching it until I felt it being lifted and teased. Jack held some of my hair in front of me, and I saw the tips of my hair were white with frost. He swept it up here, applied chill there, creating new shapes that pleased his artistic eye. When he was done, my tea was cool, my neck was cold, and my head was freezing. I was also wondering what he had done, and there was that feeling of excitement as one gets when you have been to the salon. He stepped back, taking gentle hold of my shoulder and turning me around, inspecting his craft from all angles. He nodded his approval. I walked over to the car window and ducked to see my reflection. I gave a little gasp. I had never imagined my hair could look so regal. The lines of frost followed the curls as it swept into an updo with a veil of frost. I looked at him out of the corner of my eye and smiled just before he faded into the morning white. I must admit that it melted as I drove to work, and by the time I was at my desk, I looked like a wet rat and was chilled and sneezing. My coworkers looked at me, wondering what I had done to my hair. But that was a secret for Jack and me. And now, you too. I am getting over the cold, but this is a warning. This is why you should listen to your mother and your aunts when they tell you not to go outside with wet hair. Because the artist Jack Frost might want to play with you, too. The second teller for this episode is Muesi Simpson, a storyteller from Uganda. He has a passion of telling stories rooted in the African tradition and has written and performed stories for diverse audiences. In 2016, his folktale, The Strong and Weak, was shortlisted in the Reimagined Folktale Contest. He is the curator of Wandika Children's Writing Prize, a creative writing competition for primary school children in Uganda. This is him telling the tale, Saibongo the Bulldozer.
Once upon a time, there was a beautiful village called Masha, which was the most beautiful village in Africa. Masha was such a blessed village. It had abundant food and the most fertile soils in the whole of Africa. People from other villages would visit Masha with empty baskets. They would fill their baskets with food and carry them home saying, "Thank you, Masha, for always feeding us." But once, there was a severe drought throughout this village. The sun baked the earth and all the plants dried down. The soils became so infertile that food could no longer grow. The people of Masha ran to their neighbors and begged, but their neighbors were not able to help. "What are we going to do?" the people of Masha wondered. They went to their witch doctors. Their witch doctors tried all they could, but they could not stop the famine. The people of Masha, of course disappointed, ran to their elders. "Our dear elders, why are we having all this famine? Have our ancestors forsaken us?" Of course, the elders of Masha didn't know what to say. One evening, they went and knelt at the top of a nearby mountain where they often met with their ancestors. "Our dear ancestors," they shouted as they looked towards the sky. "Have you forsaken us? Have you forgotten your people? Have you left us to die of hunger?" the elders shouted. There was a long silence, and then a deep voice. "We know what you're going through," the voice came from the sky. When the ancestors spoke, there was a shaking in the ground and a whirling in the air. "What should we do?" the elders asked. The ancestors told them to go and tell their people to irrigate, till, and plant food on their pieces of land. But the elders told them how their land had dried and how food could no longer grow. They told them how the people of Masha had lost all hope in their land. They waited for the ancestors' reply, but the reply did not come. So they went and gathered the people. "Listen, our people, our ancestors have not forsaken us." The people of Masha were happy to hear this. "And our ancestors have shown us a way how we can overcome this famine," the elders said. The people of Masha were excited to hear this too. "We shall organize a contest. We will assign each participant a piece of land. The first participant to irrigate, till, and plant food on their piece in 2 days shall win a big reward," the elders announced. The people clapped. When the elders asked who wanted to participate, 2 men raised their hands. One man was Saibongo. Saibongo was tall, with big neck muscles and big shoulders. His chest was carved outward, and his arms, oh my God, Saibongo's arms, they resembled 2 big banana stems. His eyes were as red as paper, and his skin complexion was that of a hippo. The other man was Kanyama. Kanyama was short and slender. Everything on Kanyama's body was thin, except his head and two pimples on his forehead. Saibongo saw Kanyama's loose joints and laughed. His eyes were already beaming with eagerness. He could not even wait for the night to fall, so he went and spent the night lying in the grass on his piece of assignment. In the morning, Saibongo was feeling very determined. He was hitting his hoe on the hard, dusty ground like a madman. Bypassers would first think it was a bulldozer digging, but after realizing it was Saibongo, they would stop and say, "Saibongo, our man, keep it up. Keep it up, the strongest man in our land." The more Saibongo had these comments, the more he wished more and more people could bypass. That evening, the elders came and found Saibongo halfway his work. But to their surprise, his competitor, Kanyama, had not yet arrived. "Where is Kanyama?" the elders asked. Saibongo didn't respond. "What is he doing?" the elders asked themselves. "Doesn't he want to get our reward?" they thought as they left. Kanyama reached there late that night. He came with 6 men and 5 women and immediately began assigning each one of them tasks. Your task is to plant. You two, your task is to irrigate. And you three, your task is to till," he went on instructing them. Within few hours, Kanyama's men and women had finished all their tasks. "Thank you so much, my friends," Kanyama said. With his handkerchief, he wiped the sweat from their faces. When Saibongo woke up the next morning, he picked his hoe and rushed to complete his task. His mind was buried in his thoughts. His backcloth shirt was waving gently to the cold wind, and his rugabire shoes were rolling with every step he made. But as Saibongo was approaching his place of work, he looked towards Kanyama's side. What he saw shocked him. His tongue became heavy in his mouth. The color of his eyes darkened. He could not believe what he was seeing. Tears began rolling down Saibongo's face. He tried to rub them, but his hands were trembling. Saibongo's knees were shaking. With a miserable look, he fell down in the bushes at the foot of an old fig tree and fainted. Shortly, Kanyama and the elders arrived. "Thank you so much for making us proud," the elders told him. They had reserved a whole acre of land as his reward. Kanyama was so grateful. And when the people of Masha gathered in their hundreds and started chanting his name, "Kanyama our man, Kanyama our man, Kanyama the strongest man in our land," this made him even more fulfilled. They asked him how he had managed to do it, and Kanyama smiled and said, "I wouldn't have managed alone. I had a strong team." Later, Kanyama organized the people of Masha in groups, and within days, they had finished irrigating, tilling, and planting food on their vast pieces of land. The plants grew, and soon Masha had enough food to feed herself and her neighbors. Indeed, Masha became a glorious village once again. The end.
Thank you for listening to the Story Story Podcast. Show the love. Find Kendall Lynch and Muezi Simpson on the internet. Tell them you heard them on the podcast and now want to hear them tell more stories. You can connect with the podcast on Facebook or Instagram at Story Story Podcast or me at Rachel Ann Harding. The beautiful brains behind the fairy tale sponsor was Megan Hicks. The inspiration for the true fairy tale was a flipping cold morning on Monday. You can see the Fairy Tale sponsor ads on Story Story Podcast and the Facebook and Instagram page. While you're there, let me know the favorite story you have heard or the favorite stories of your childhood. Who knows? Maybe you'll hear them here soon. This podcast is made possible by patrons like you. Consider becoming a patron or joining the mailing list to get podcast goodies or writing a review on Apple Podcasts, which help other story lovers find and enjoy the show. You will hear more stories next week, but until then, live happily ever after.
Mary-Kate opened up the door, and there, on the doorstep, wrapped in his own blanket, was her baby.
And to this day, Anansi spins webs so that he can catch the flea, the fly, and the moth that got away.
If you go down to the lake on a clear day, when the water lies as calm as a sheet of glass, you can still see the rooftops of the castle glittering in the sunlight. And if you listen really closely, you can even hear the festive music from the royal court.